Welcome to the Qumran Report, coming to you live from Skid Row Studios. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. This week on the Qumran Report, we will be talking about prison reform, seeking solutions with Georgiana Williams, Kay Usumi, Jeff Norman, Ernest Big Earn Shepherd, and Lee Shaw. Also, we will be introducing a new section of the Qumran Report entitled The Veterans Corner, and we have with us on the line Judith Bowman, who will be co-producing this section. She is the development director of the Roby Theater Company. Judy, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Well, thank you, Melvin. I'm happy to be with you.
You're so glad to have you on the line. Judy, can you tell us a little about yourself and how did you get involved with projects dealing with veterans?
Well, I'm an English major, and so English majors are always looking for things to justify their choices. And I think, some of the work that I'm hoping to do with you and others involves literary projects. So it's a basic natural for an English major.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell us about some of your plans for the Veterans Corner?
Well, sure. One of the first projects that I'd like to have you consider is maybe some adaptations of Wallace Terry's book, Bloods. We've talked a bit about that, a book that chronicles 20 black men that served in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's right. And we have a little section today, just a little information about the author, Wallace Terry, that we're going to read a section. Do you want to read that section? You want me to read that section about Wallace Terry and the Bloods?
Well, I'll read a little bit and I'll let you pick up. Some of the facts that I did find about Wallace Terry was that he was a Time Magazine war correspondent stationed in Saigon during 1963 to 1969. And he was actually the first black war correspondent that was assigned a permanent duty abroad, first ever in the U.S. History of the U.S. He got his first writing assignment for the Washington Post when he was just 19 years old. And I also read that he once posed as a waiter so that he could get an interview with Orville Faubus, who was the governor of Arkansas back then and just a staunch segregationist. A picture of a handshake between Wallace Terry, who was a black man, and this racist Orville Faubus made the front page of the New York Times back in 1957. So Wallace Terry was on his way to writing this book, Bloods, which was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize in Literature some time back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you want me to go on?
Yeah, I can. I see where it's his wife, memory of him trying to write the book Bloods after so many missions, getting the 20 interviews, and she mentioned something in quote, "For Wally, getting his book published became an obsession, a shadowy thing that was like another heartbeat in our household. It sat with us at the dinner table, watched the evening news with us, et cetera, like that." And she mentioned the manuscript got 100 rejections until Random House eventually published the book in 1984, and the book was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. The book remained a definite account of Vietnam through the eyes of African American soldiers' eyes. Like other black soldiers, the men were fighting two wars, the racial divide at home and the daily struggle for civil rights and the day-to-day struggle to win in Vietnam for their country. The men branded themselves in solidarity and called themselves Bloods, like blood brothers, a way to identify with each other as black, as blacks. The term conveyed a way to say I feel closer together with you and you got my support. And they said, Terry believed some good came from the war. White and black men shared friendships on the front line together. for the first time ever in U.S. for black and whites to serve together. And I'm looking forward to it, because what we're going to do on a weekly basis every week, we're going to touch base with you, and then I'm going to have some actors in here, and we're going to read some sections and stuff from the book Blood. So we're looking forward to that, Judy.
Well, that'll be wonderful. I'll look forward to working with you on that.
And also, just let me say a couple things, because I hope we get a chance to touch on something about your father, who was a Tuskegee Airman, and I also want to touch on that whole concept of Bloods, which became, you know, one of the names for the gangs out here, the Bloods and the Crips, et cetera. And I thought that correlation was interesting.
Sure.
All right, Judy. Did you want to say anything else? I'm just so glad to get this section started, and we'll be looking forward to next week start reading from the book.
All right. Well, I look forward to that too, Melvin, and I'll share more about my dad. I did grow up as an Air Force brat. My dad was one of the original Tuskegee Airmen. So, you know, veterans projects in general are just something that seems like come naturally to me. You know, it's a way that you can be patriotic but still understand the history, especially the history that blacks have had in the armed services. And so there's a lot to explore there, and look forward to exploring it with you and with the other actors and all the other project managers that you work with.
Okay, thank you very much, Judy, and have a good evening.
You too. Bye, Melvin.
Thank you. Judy Boltman, we're looking forward to that section. She's the development director for the Roby Theater Company. Now, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio two of the panelists and the moderator for the upcoming forum on prison reform this Sunday, July the 8th, 2012, at 6 o'clock at the Exchange. Georgiana Williams, Ernest Big Earn Shepherd III, and Jeff Norman. Also sitting in on the round table, Lee Shaw and Kay Usumi. Welcome to the Coonround Report.
Hey, Melvin, how you doing?
Oh, just fine. Let's start with Georgiana. Can you tell us a little about yourself? And then we want to see what the term prison reform means to each one of us, starting off with Georgiana.
I was born in Vicksburg, Mississippi. I finished high school, went to nursing school, and then I decided to move to Southern California. And I spent my time working and going to church and taking care of the kids in the neighborhood. But on April 29, 1992, it changed my life. I found out that I did not leave all the racist people in Mississippi, because all hell broke loose at Farmington Normandy. And that's right around the corner from my house. And then in May that same year, they arrested my son and other young men from the neighborhood. They overcharged them. And I began to think about what happened with Emmett Till. And I decided I wasn't going to let these boys be crucified. So I just made up my mind and put my life out there. If they had taken my life, it would have been okay, as long as I got justice for them. Mm-hmm. And that was my plan, and that's what we got, was justice. Because everyone knows they had charged those brothers with four charges. And if they had been found guilty, they would have spent life in prison. So I could not understand how they could charge four African-American brothers with these kind of charges, when every day we know that our brothers are being beat down in the street by the police. And look what happened in the South where we live, Melvin, and nobody mm-hmm. went to jail. So my question, well, I ask you, you show me how many white men you got in prison for the wrongs they did to the black, and I'll shut up. Mm-hmm. So no one has shown me how many white men they have in prison for the wrongs they done to black. So I guess they wanted me to keep talking, because otherwise they would have proved it and shut me up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we're going to come back around and talk about prison reform in a minute. Let me move to Big Earn. Tell us a little about yourself, because you're one of the panelists coming up Sunday also.
Thank you. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, on the east side, section southeast of Los Angeles. And I began, you know, life as an ideological, bright, and the more I became aware, the more disenchanted I became. And my disenchantment led me at an early age to begin a career in youth authorities. And I began Pastor Rovers, Preston, Tracy, this began an evolution that ended, ironically, on San Quentin's death row. And I went to San Quentin's death row as a result of a fist fight, and a man inadvertently died. And the district attorney offered me a deal for second-degree murder. I said I thought it was manslaughter in terms of law. And he said, well, since you refuse my deal, I'm going to kill you. And he advocated, he took it to the jury and advocated for first-degree murder. I didn't make it any better because this was in the 60s. I was a big, strong youngster with a bad attitude and a big natural on my head, which in those days was considered, I don't know, atrocious. And they said, cut your hair. And I said, I'm not cutting anything. And so he prevailed. He went in front of the jury and he told them, he dehumanized me in front of my family right there in the jury. He said, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, this man doesn't think like we do. He doesn't feel like we do. He's a behemoth. He's a throwback. He's a misanthrope. And he said, this man doesn't deserve to even breathe air in prison. You must kill him. Mm. And so the jury went along and they gave me the death penalty. Mm. And I sat on death row 3.5 years and I began an enormous education. And I came back and I became the lawyer the second time. And I won myself a life sentence of 7 to life.
Pro per.
Pro per, that's correct. And I began to walk in these yards. And Folsom Prison, I hit Folsom Prison in 1971. And I walked the yards and walked the yards and walked the yards and went through all the hell holes and death traps and whatever was in front of me. I said, well, I'm young. I got a 7 to life. I can do this standing on my head. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know that it was going to turn into 45 years. Mm. You know, and I feel as though, I don't call it God. I guess I call it like fate. I feel like fate has something in store for me because fate, I wasn't trying to save my own life. Something was saving me and preserving me and got me out and got me here and got me back. And now I'm in front of you people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to share my vision. And I received, you know, they say for everything that you lose, you gain something else. I lost a lot, but I also believe that I gained something. And I gained something that I believe that I can share with the people mm-hmm. and help make this a better world. Mm-hmm. That's the reason I'm here.
Okay. That's amazing, amazing. Oh, okay. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff Norman, tell us a little about yourself.
Sure. Well, I have always been passionate about particular justice issues, but not the whole panoply, so to speak. One of the things I've been focusing on for the last few years is the plight of veterans. And I became aware of how their involvement in torture damages not only the people that are tortured, but themselves. And through doing some work along those lines, some folks showed me the parallels between what's going on with veterans and prisoners. Solitary confinement is defined by many people as torture. And so I've begun to cross over into that realm. And there was one particular event that really got me moving on this, which was we did something, a presentation called Reckoning with Torture at a church in Pasadena a couple of months ago. And it was at that event that I saw Big Earn speak. And in the same way that George Ann was just moved to applaud him in his studio, I too, you know, internally was standing up and cheering because he's such a great inspirational speaker. And I immediately began to think about what can we do with this man. He's too talented, he has too much to say to just squander the opportunity. So I tracked him down and we began to talk about what we could do together. Now simultaneously I'm involved in starting the California Justice Party, a new political party, and we are focusing on two ballot initiatives that are going to be on the ballot this November. One is the Safe California Act, which calls for replacing the death penalty with life in prison. We like the first part better than the second part, abolishing the death penalty. Mm-hmm. And the other initiative is the Three Strikes Reform Act, which means no longer will there be a life sentence for anybody unless their third conviction is a violent or serious offense.
Mm-hmm.
So we're connecting the dots, and now Big Earn is exploring the possibility of running for public office, possibly even president of the United States, because we want a platform that to give him a big platform where he'll be able to address this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going on right now.
Good. And you're going to need a vice president, too.
Yeah. Are you lobbying for that position right now?
No, I'm lobbying for somebody like George Anna sitting over here.
I am open to Sister George Anna. I'm open to all the people.
Yeah, you're talking about. That's a great platform. Kay, would you want to say a few words?
All I'll say is that I've been an activist for about 20 years, and I got involved in the black movement, exactly this Tibetan kid took me to the first black protest where another Korean person had killed a black man on Western near Bethel AME Church. Anyway, that I'm an activist and I'm part of News and Letters. We believe that we need a fundamental change in society, a radical change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, Kay. And then also we got Lee over here. He's heading up our gang's people section just to introduce himself, say a little about, let him know who he is, because we're going to dabble in that a minute. I mean, later on at the latter part of the show. Lee, you want to say a few words?
Yeah. I'm like Big Earn. I'm a product of the bottoms, you know. And where I come up at, it was a world of its own, you know. Came up around them old gangs, the businessmen, the Slawsons, the Parks, the Pebbles, the 20s, what you call outlaws, you know. And from that, I moved on to the Panther Party. I introduced there, and I become more of a, I wouldn't say a militant, but my interest, I began to get interested in what was going on at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a tutor, which was my quite close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the brothers teaching me at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember somebody telling me one night, I want you to look at this program with me. And they was playing some tapes, Brother George Jackson, coming at George, right? And the person told me, says, now, some of the smartest people that he got on the planet Earth are locked up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lo and behold, later on, I found out.
That was the truth.
It was the truth.
That's right.
You know, it's the truth.
Now, one of the things that we might be able to get into a discussion on that I'm interested in this, maybe this new political party that Jeff is talking about, maybe be able to really, really talk about and deal with some of these issues that we're talking about here. But let's move on from that. I want to talk about prison reform, because you hear a lot of different terms and stuff about the meaning of prison reform. Let me just start off with, let's talk about some of the major problems with the prison system. And then we'll talk about solutions. Let's talk about, start with Georgia.
Number one is overcrowded.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of brothers and sisters behind bars that are innocent. And I agree, we need a change, not only in California, but everywhere when it comes to African Americans and the Mexican people and the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
We really need some changes in the community first. We need some jobs, and we need to encourage our brothers and sisters to stay in school and get an education, at least so they can get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to live in South L.A., was there from 1960 till after the rebellion, and we have a lot of dropouts, and a lot of kids are selling drugs. So I would like to see all of that change.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see the boys and girls just get a high school diploma and not go to jail, but most of the kids over there in the area that I lived in all have a felony, and once you get a felony you can forget about getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see that change, you know, all these kids with felonies that when they get 18 Mm-hmm. I'd like to see a change. And I was thinking about, especially about a young kid who had committed a crime when he was like 14. And then when he was 19, he committed a crime again. And they brought back the crime that he had committed when he was a kid and gave him a long time in prison. I think that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we really need some jobs in our community. And talking about the prison, I've been going there for years. In the beginning, they used to have family visits. They had classes. They had activities on the yard. My nephew was in Texas, and he's out of prison now, thank God. And he got three PhDs. Like, can you believe in Texas? They still have training programs, and here in California, they don't have nothing. Not mm-hmm. a thing. You can't even get a GED in the prisons now.
Mm-hmm.
They just sitting there in the cells, like a turtle on the bank,
mm-hmm.
with nothing to do, nothing to inspire them, nothing to look forward to. So if they go in, like you said, you went in as a kid, then you come out a man. What kind of life you gonna have? Some people don't. Some men and sisters don't have no family when they come out to help them, to give them a place to stay, food to eat until they can find some work. What gonna happen to all of these people? I want them to see them come out. I wish I was a billionaire. I would say empty the prisons and send them all to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Big Earl, let's move over to you. You know, the same questions about some of the major problems with the prison system. We'll talk about solutions a little later on. And she touched on some of the things we talked about earlier about banning the box and all. But some of the major problems that you saw with the prison system here in California.
Well, Sister Georgette, she really articulated some of the scenarios involving prisons. And I lived through those, you know. And I come to the thought, I come to this thought right here, that prison reform is not just confined to prison. It confines to the outer world. The outer world must be reformed in order for prisons to be reformed. Prisons reflect a microcosm of the world. They say prisons reflect the real values of the outer society, you know, and in order to reform prison, we have to reform those thoughts that spawn the prisons. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's people who attempt to separate the two. And you can't. You know, it's like I expressed before. I walked through the worst prison structures that California could produce. And I've seen, just like this brother spoke, I've seen prison in the 60s, which is when I came, and I've seen the prisons degrade into this hell, double hell that they have now. Prisons once produced great people, especially in the black community. A lot of our leaders came from prison. Prison used to produce, they used to say, prison is the vanguard of society because a lot of great people came from prison and took the reins and led societies. That was then. That was what Georgette pointed out. We had programs, we had studies, we had positive things going for each other. I seen all that degrade. Myself personally, I was so fortunate to have come through that era. And I maintained my, positive direction. You know, I swam through all those rivers of negativity, but I was armed because I had been there previously. I had gotten my birthing in the 60s. And this is what I bring to the world. I was so fortunate. My thoughts have been burned in the furnace of the negativities. And I'm out, and I like to liken it to like what they call in American literature, Rip Van Winkle, who went to sleep for 20 years and came back and saw a whole new world. Well, I've been in this microcosm for 45 years, and I've come back and I've seen a world that brought me to tears. especially in our communities. And if it's anything that I can do to help, I never thought that I could see this, the society and these communities turn out the way that they turn. I never thought that they could get the blessings from the 60s and turn them into curses. And we could turn on each other and curse each other. And they got these blacks running around becoming volunteer niggas. They becoming volunteer niggas. We were involuntary. We wanted to strain up and be proud and bring the best of ourselves into the world. Somehow it's all flipped and they want to bring the worst of themselves into the world. And so I'm just here just dedicated to realize that the reformation, reforming, it has to be simultaneous. You know, let me just give one example before I pass it on. And this underlines the score that prisons have turned into modern-day plantations and has replaced some of the effects of slavery and has replaced some of the ovens, the genocidal ovens that were used in Germany and have become convenient places to commit genocide on the communities, you know. And one of the things that you can see is examples in countries where there's a uniracial kind of type structure, like Switzerland, Sweden,
the Netherlands,
and all like that. They have a whole different approach toward prisons. And the people who are in prison still maintain the dignity because they know those people came from them. Somehow over here in this society, this racism came in and they have separated themselves from the people in prison. What do they think they'll do? Never get back out? And the people who attempt to use incarceration as a cure, this is where they're leading. Lock them up and throw away the key. They think this is the solution. That's insane. You know, and so we must reform that. You know, we must reform that by reinstituting humanity, realizing these people came from them, just like in other countries where they don't have the stigma of racism. We have to remove that so we can see these people as valuable people, as potentially valuable people that needs addressed so they can return back into the world viable. Prisons should be healing places and not hurting places. So that's the reform that I'm looking at.
Good point. Okay, let's slide over to Jeff. What do you think about some of the major problems that you see within the prison system?
Well, I don't have nearly the depth of understanding that Earn has, but I do very much share his big picture vision. And, you know, neither one of us is hardly the first person to observe that you can, you know, judge a society by what's going on in its prisons, by who goes to prison and for what reason, for how long they stay, and the conditions in the prison. And so I would very much like to work with Earn and support him however I can in getting at these big picture issues. Why is it that society is so cold towards prisoners? Why is it that people who are otherwise compassionate can't bring themselves to focus on the degradation that prisoners are enduring in prison? I think a lot of it has to do with people who lack self-esteem and they have so their own lives are so empty, and rather than face that, they have this need to turn against other people. And it's really quite pathetic, and it's a very complicated thing, and it's not something I expect to solve immediately, but that's one approach that I definitely want to work on. Mm-hmm. The other thing is shining light on what's actually going on in the prison, which is close parallel to what I just said. But, you know, the fact is hardly anybody except prisoners and people who work there ever actually see what is happening between these prison guards and prisoners. Mm-hmm. There was somebody who works for the ACLU here in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, had a rare glimpse of it. While she was there, she actually witnessed one of the prison guards beating a prisoner. And even then, it wasn't an easy thing to expose. So, but I think that there's not any good reason to deny having some sort of observation of what's going on there. I mean, this is our government that's doing this. So I think it's doable to set up some kind of a mechanism where there's more monitoring going on from the outside world about what's happening behind prison walls.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, there are a couple of good ways to approach prison reform.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about you, Kay? You want to say something? You want to say a little about what do you think are the major problems that we see in the prison system? Especially out here in the California prison system.
Well, I'm just taking this from news and letters paper that we have two articles on the prisoners' hunger strike that they started last July, and they basically went on hunger strike because the authorities tried to, all these people that are tagged as gang members and gang injunction, and they had a program to get the gang member to snitch on each other in prison. And they had a fancy name for it. And if they didn't, they went to solitary confinement, 23 and a half hour in a cold cell, and, for years and years. And even if they committed no crime in prison, if they did, if their conduct was, excellent, as long as they didn't refute the gang culture and snitch, then they went to solitary confinement. And they went on a hunger strike, and they promised they'll do something, because the hunger strike went throughout the prisons in California. And it was so big that there was support on the outside. And, there was a lot of activists and relatives of people in prison that went to these demonstrations. And the authorities said, we'll help you, and we'll do something about it, stop the hunger strike. They stopped it. They didn't do anything. They went back on the hunger strike. Again, they said, we'll do something. They stopped it. They didn't do one bit of reform. Mm-hmm. So all I want to say is, like our newspaper says, gang label is permanent. That's all.
Okay, good. And you're talking about that concept that they call debriefing, right? Debriefing.
Exactly.
In terms of what they do. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the how effective was the hunger strike. Lee, you want to say something on what you think the major problems in the prison system?
If you're going to try to change them and reform, you're going to have to restructure the leadership up in there, because people are getting paid off. You know what I'm saying? People are getting pressured. Give you a little incident right quick. At Chino, a few years ago, some inmates got beat up in the kitchen, right? So they had the investigators from the street coming, to investigate it. They found out that the COs at the prison were at fault. Right? You know what they did? They took the office down there, which was in Chino or somewhere close to there. They took the office and dismantled it. They gave all the investigators, associate warden positions. One of them went to East Chino, one of them went to West Chino. Spanned them out.
So,
they didn't.
Yeah.
Because one of the people that was working there knew the people, and she knew. When you start talking about prison reform, you got to make everybody at the top responsible. If you lie, you out of here,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if you don't, the little people at the bottom, they're going to do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So all they say is that, don't let it reach me. Mm-hmm. So you start from the top, you make him responsible, he's going to make that down below responsible to him.
Okay. Look, let's talk a little about realignment, because realignment is something... a realignment is when they decided a couple of years ago that they was planning this, but they implemented a few months ago to let some of the low-level, non-violent, level one and level two offenders out back to the community, and they suspended a lot of the parole for some of the lower-level offenders, but they didn't provide for any kind of services or something for them. So we've seen a huge impact in the downtown area, in the recovery area. We've seen an overcrowding, overpack in terms of trying to find housing, permanent housing, et cetera, a job like that. You want to take it off, start off with that what you see with coming back to the community, trying to deal with the basics like housing?
Yeah, well, I could share with you a vision from underneath the belly of the beast, and this alignment where they're taking state prisoners down into county facilities. And we speak about, when we speak about respect, I'm involved in attempting to, it's too big of a picture to talk about using this as a solution, but just as a, I had an opportunity to meet with some county officials, and from the reality that I understand is that the guards down in the county jail have so little respect for the guys coming in that the state prisoners that come from the state are shocked. You know, this is some of the things. I was called to a meeting with some of the people who ran the county facilities, and some of the things that we asked them to do was to, if they're going to go by the state prisoners involved in the county jails, to use their law, the Title 15, which means that everyone should respect everyone else. They have these things down in the county that they believe that they can insult a person to control a person. You don't need to do that. You know what I mean? They believe that it's their job to continue to punish you. Most of the guys down in the county are not even convicted of crimes. They're waiting to go to court. It is not, the courts are the ones that mete out the punishment. It is not the duty of the guards to punish you and give you a living hell while you're waiting to go and through the judicial process, you know? And so their job is to be custodians and to maintain the custody of the prisoners until they go through their processes. And they gleefully, they are bullies, straight out. And they gleefully attempt to dehumanize these people that are the same people that are their next door neighbors. The only difference is that they committed some kind of infraction. And now all of a sudden, they no longer belong to the human society. Mm-hmm. And they gleefully just torture these people. You know, so any kind of alignment, I anticipate it's going to be real trouble when state prisoners come down and become a part of this. I do not think, you know, it's a breaking point in everyone. And I do not think this is going to really be, I hate to predict something that's very terrible, but
you don't see it work.
This is a very terrible mix.
Okay. Let me move on to Lee, and then I want to get some comments from Georgiana over here. Lee.
What I wanted to do was tell people, this is how it works, right? You got to go back. Think about what happened a few years back, right? See, they always tell you, well, you won this, you're going to go, they're going to send you to prison now, right? In 2005, 6, and I guess 7, they had violators stuck in the county jail. They won their right to go to prison because they were state prisoners, right? The county jail making money off, the county of Los Angeles making money off keeping them in that jailhouse, right? Mm-hmm. So they went in right to go to prison and get their little day for day because they wasn't getting it down there, right? Mm-hmm. But now, look what happened with realignment. They wind up right back there again. See, that's what I say, lift it. See, there's no way, you can't trust anything they say. Just like Kay was talking about the hunger strike. We're going to do this right here. Never did it. Just to keep everything down, get everything back to normal so we can plan how to move this thing around a little bit like we want to. See, but when you tell them anything they do once, they'll do it twice. Mm-hmm. And if they get away with it, they keep doing it. It took 3 or 4 years, but they got the state prisoners right back in that county jail.
Mm-hmm.
And they shouldn't be there.
Okay. George Allen, you want to comment on anything about this realignment thing? Go ahead. Come in.
For the last 3 years, I haven't been active, but I get a lot of phone calls since I've been living in Fontana. And like the brother was talking about the county jail, I experienced when my son was there. He wasn't able to call home. He couldn't take a shower or do anything. And believe it or not, one of the Mendez brothers used to call me every day to let me know that my son was all right. So, and then I had another friend who was in the county jail. And he called me and he told me that the people who work in the jail, the guards, they're the one who causes the confusion. They will say to you, there's a blood over there, or there's a crip over there, and he said this and this about you all. And then when they get angry with each other, then everything explodes. And like someone called me when they was in Chino a few years ago, he told me the guards started that riot because they didn't want to be laid off because they had said it was going to lay so many guards off. Mm. And they started, they caused that riot in Chino.
Mm. Yeah. You know something, though, Mel? If you were to monitor around October, on into Christmas of each year, if you were to monitor each prison and what goes on in it, watch. But the majority of them are locked down. Mm. Why? Because now I need to get this Christmas money out the way. This Thanksgiving, because I got to go all the way through this thing right here. I got to get me some extra money.
Some overtime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? For any prison guard just starting, or 5 years, or whatever it is, for him to make $130,000 a year, he almost make as much as the warden do.
He's making more than that because they're the ones. I better shut up.
Yeah.
You know, because how you think that marijuana and that cocaine and that heroin get in there?
And the cell phones. Take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You better shut up, bro.
You know. All right, now. Yeah, it's a couple more things I want to deal with. We'll deal with them in our closing comments section. And that's, I want to be sure that we have a chance to talk about some retraining programs and this band-the-box things, some possible solutions. But let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back with our other in-studio guests. We're going to talk about our gang section.
This is the community calendar for the month of July. Sunday, July the 8th at 6 p.m., Drama Stage Kungwan will present a forum on prison reform. The theme will be seeking solutions. Guest panel will be Ernest Big Earn Shepherd III, who spent 45 years behind bars. Georgiana Williams, she's the mother of Damian Football Williams. And Moan just got back from San Quentin. The moderator will be Jeff Norman of the Veterans Project. The forum will be followed by a question and answer session. There will be light refreshment serves, and this is a free event. The location is The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street, Los Angeles. For more information, you can call 323-850-4436. Monday, July the 9th, from 8 to 9 p.m., on the Kungwan Report Live Internet Radio Show, our special guest will be General Jeff. He's a longtime activist and presently a member of D-Link, which is the Downtown Los Angeles Neighborhood Council. He will be speaking on mental health issues in the Skid Row community. Sunday, July the 15th at 3 p.m., Drama Stage Kungwan presents in the Son of Play Reading Series, a stage play called Stand Your Grounds, written by Joelle King. This play is a two-act drama that mimics perspective of social injustice and race relations. The location will be The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street. For more information, you can call 323-850-4436. And Sunday, July the 22nd, Drama Stage Kungwan presents The Memphis and Chicago Style Blues Man, Art Walk Jamal. The location of this event, The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street. For more information, 323-850-4436. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And once again, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Earlene Anthony. Now, we're back with the Qumran Report. We have us in the studio. We heard from him earlier. He's an actor, community activist, and also the stage manager for Drama Stage Qumran. That's Lee Shaw. And this weekend, our Gangs Are People 2 section, we're going to talk about CNN commentator Roland Martin calling out President Obama about the gang violence in Chicago, President Obama's hometown. And this week, I'd like to focus in on 2 points, Roland Martin calling out the president, and then also we're going to talk about some solutions to the problem of gang and violence. Let's start off with Lee, and I also want to touch on the program that Big Earn works with over there. And I also want to make sure I talk to Georgiana about the possibility of putting some after-school program in that Florence and Normandy area. First, let's start off with Lee.
President Obama's hometown. You know, that's kind of hard to believe that you wouldn't have something to say or some input as to how you can solve a problem, right? But I won't just put it on Obama either, because it's not just his hometown. One man just left the White House to go back to run for mayor, Rahm Emanuel.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about that? You know what I'm saying? Ain't nobody want to talk about all these people dying, but these junkies killing off each other. We know one day it's going to stop, but how much damage is it going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? If I'm the president for the people, then I got to be concerned about all the people, especially our young people. Mm-hmm. They make up the future of that town.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? If you can't do something about that right there, you know, I mean, what are you going back to when you run for office and mm-hmm. your 8 years is up? Mm-hmm. What are you going back to?
And one thing that Roland Martin pointed out in that report is that from the beginning of the year all the way up to now, you have more people killed in Chicago than soldiers in Afghanistan.
Ain't that
and
crazy?
We just talking about just in Chicago. Yeah, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. that's crazy. You know what I'm saying? They are in battle in Afghanistan, right? And they don't even have a fraction of the deaths that Chicago have.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Okay. And for anybody to say, this is a passing thing, well, yeah, I'll tell you what, if it's a passing thing, When we fix this thing, don't take the credit for it. Just back up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to fix it.
Okay. Now, I want to move that because I also want to get some ideas on what can we do, you know, to help find some solutions for this thing. And Big Earn, let's talk about the program you was telling us about earlier where you work with at this particular school, the programs that you saw some positive. Go ahead, John.
Right. And what this brother just touched on, you know, really touches me. And it never fails to touch me. And it's always fresh to me, you know. And so when I was approached by the people at Youth Justice Center, they call it, and it's a Chuco's gym attached to that, with the idea of doing something positive to help at-risk youth try to find some type of value within themselves so that they can do something positive in life, I couldn't say no. And these people came and they embraced me. And they looked at my record and they looked at my abilities and they saw that I had a career in boxing in prison. Okay, and so they used this, and I made myself available to them also. And so I became a boxer trainer there. And under the guise of boxing, I was able to touch some of these youngsters and reach some of these youngsters and attempt to speak to them and turn some of that negativity into something positive and to show them how to not self-destruct. Do not self-destruct. Whatever you feel, you have a right to be angry. You have a right to be enraged. You have a right to feel that you're insane. Somebody said, any black man in America who don't think he's crazy is insane. Something like that. It was real. You know, you have a right to feel all that. But however, it's how you use it, turn it into something positive. We've been doing it and bumping our heads against the wall. We've been mad at the world, so we're going to kill ourselves. No. let's try to change that into something positive. So this is my endeavor. Mm-hmm. And I'm so pleased that the people accepted me. Youth Justice Center at JUCO is dedicated toward involving ourselves. We have a neutral turf. Anybody from any gang can come in here and be safe. Mm-hmm. And this is one of my dedications to create a safe haven for them.
Where are they located? They located in...
They're located on Florence and West Boulevard. It's one block west of Crenshaw. It's the first block into Inglewood. Yeah, Redondo Boulevard. That's exactly... Actually, the street is Redondo Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so they are dedicated toward getting these kids and reshaping them into people who are focused on receiving GEDs, focused on receiving high school diplomas. We have computer labs in there, and we teach the kids how to use, all this is free, how to use the computers. We have real studies, studies in regard to their self-esteem. And this is what I'm really involved with. And I teach the boxing, and I try to instill in them self-esteem, their value as people. And it's gender neutral. It's the boys, and we got the girls in there, and they're boxing, and they're thwarting all that bullyism and all that stuff that's attempts to make them lesser beings and to create some beings that are able to make decision-making processes, independent decision-making processes, and not submit to peer pressure.
Okay.
And by the way, I just want to mention, your listeners might be interested in checking out this video. My colleague Rob Corsini and I recently went over to the Youth Justice Center, and we shot some video of Earn there, and it's really quite poignant because you see not only the students but the staff are very moved by Earn. You see them interacting.
Great video.
Right, and he also works for another great organization called FACTS, which is Families Against California Three Strikes. We also went over there. And so it's if you want to go to our blog and you can take a look at this video and see Earn in action, the web address is callofjustice.com. That's callofjustice.com. And there's also info on the event that we're having Sunday right there at that blog.
Beautiful.
So you see, I'm not just making words.
I know. Okay. George Chandler.
He's for real.
Yeah.
Oh, I lived there in South L.A. for many years. So I say the first thing you need to do is get their parents motivated and involved. Yeah. Because what go on in your house and what go on in your neighborhood, you can talk to the kids and get them to change. The area that I lived in was the A-trays, and none of that stuff that went on in the other area did not go on West 71st Street, because they knew there was someone there who loved them. They knew that they had a place to live. They knew they could come take a bath, wash their clothes, someone to take them to the doctor, but you could not bring drugs, you could not bring guns, and you could not drink at my house.
Mm-hmm.
So I say the parents need to be motivated and make sure the kids go to school. Go over to your kids' school. Make sure that teacher is teaching what they should be teaching. And all those kids who graduated from Washington and from Manual couldn't even read. It's just disgusting, mm-hmm. the things that go on in South L.A.
Okay.
And we can make a change if enough of us get involved. Kay and I have been going over to that center on Redondo and West Boulevard, but since I moved, it's such a long drive. So a lot of things that I was involved in, I'm no longer involved. But I know that we can make a change in South L.A. All you got to do is get out there. These kids need somebody to show them that they care. They need someone they can respect. They need someone who treat them like a human. Because they tell me that 77 police precinct has changed. But when I was over there, it was the devil from hell.
Mm-hmm.
They put those guys on that concrete when it's hot, on the hood of their cars when it was hot. And if it was three or four youngsters in the car, I guarantee you they were going to stop and tell a lie.
Mm. Okay. All right, George. Now, we're winding down. We got about 30 seconds each for closing comments, about 30 seconds each. Let me go with Lee.
First of all, what we need to do, we need to stop using the word gang. When you don't meet somebody's expectation, they call you gang. When they do, they call you club or organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stop using the word gang, because that's just something somebody's put on you. They don't even call themselves a gang.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, you know, they don't even call themselves a gang.
So, and they more of a gang than anything.
Anytime you want to pass something down, you negative, say you say the gang, these gangs. Well, we can't let these gangs out of the. We can't. No. What about the Ku Klux Klan? Are they a gang or organization or club?
Okay. We got about 30 seconds apiece. Let's go over to Ernie.
Well, I witnessed the Correctional Officers Association at Greenwald. You talk about a gang. And these county jail people are guards. You talk about a gang. And they are tight. And they are united, man. And they are dedicated to dust you, man. You know what I mean? And they are terrorizing those people in there, man.
That's
you
right.
You talk about a gang.
Yeah.
Don't forget the Sheriff Department.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a great discussion, but I feel like we barely scratched the surface. Yeah. So I want to just remind everybody that we're going to have this forum on Sunday at 6 p.m. at 114 West 5th Street. We're really going to be solution-oriented, and it's going to be lively. We're really going to get into it. So I hope everybody will come down and not be shy about sharing their ideas. And the info for the event is at callofjustice.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. Kate.
Well, I'm totally against the system. Even homelessness is caused by the system. Constant wars, permanent wars, over and over is caused by the system, as is the prison. And environmental destruction and climate change is caused by the system.
Thank you. Yeah. George Allen, you got about 30 seconds on this.
I'd like to invite all my friends in South L.A. If you listen to this program, Facts, Project Cry No More, Ceasefire, why don't you come on down Sunday evening and join us, and let's talk about what's going on and what we can do to change.
Thank you, Georgia. Earlene.
Mm-hmm. Once again, piggybacking on the event for Sunday, the Forum on Prison Reform, the theme is seeking solutions. Everybody's talking about the problem. Sunday, we're going to deal with some of the solutions. So come on out and join us.
Okay. Thank you, Earlene. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to our in-studio guests, George Anna Williams, Ernest Big Earn Shepherd, Jeff Norman, Kay Usumi, Lee Shaw, and on the line with Judy Boltman. And a special thanks to Jeremy, Sonia, Nicholas, and the Skid Row Studios. You can check out our past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, skidrow.la, and dramastage-qumran.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. Thank you very much.
Listening to Skid Row Studios.
You're 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 listening to Skid Row Studios.
We're listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it with you.
Please do it with me.
Fuck that.
You please have sex with me?
At Skid Row Studios?
At Skid Row Studios.
Maybe.
Okay.